Live to See It, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Recovering from Thanksgiving. Thank you. How about you?
Yes. Well, we managed to, get back from the mall here on Black Friday in time to in time to get a show out. Recovered from our tryptophan coma on Thursday, and here we are talking about progress. We've been talking about progress all week, something to be very much thankful for. We've been looking at signs of progress, and tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. We're talking about progress. I called this show "Okay, Everybody Off the Planet," and there was actually a humorous novel, science fiction novel, years ago. And I cannot remember the author's name, but it was called All Right, Everybody Off the Planet. But I think that was too many letters to fit as a Blog Talk Radio title, so I called it Okay, Everybody Off the Planet. But actually, we're not going to talk about getting everybody off the planet. We're just going to talk about maybe some of us need to get off the planet. We had this story that we looked at on Monday. Stephen Hawking says that humans will be wiped out in 1,000 years unless we find a new planet. And I believe that Professor Hawking, his point was that we're just going to do so much environmental damage, that we're just so dangerous and reckless that if we don't find a new place to live, we're going to have used this one up, and then we're goners, basically. What do you think? Is that a good argument? Should we be concerned about moving to another planet along those lines?
Well, I think it's always best to not have all your eggs in one basket, right?
Yep.
Have a backup civilization somewhere else. Even if all you had was a thriving self-sufficient city on Mars or something like that, and one of the things we would have on Mars, I'm certain, is a backup library of the DNA of the entire environment on Earth, right? An entire genome of the planet Earth, so that if something had to be rebooted, we could do so. I think that's a safe bet, is that we'd have that sort of library off planet. And I think it's a fantastic notion. I'm not quite as pessimistic as Hawking. I think that our defenses against the something terrible happening to Earth will grow along with our capability to harm the planet. I'm a little more hopeful that we don't destroy the planet, but I'm just as excited as Hawking about colonizing other worlds. So
yeah,
let's get after it.
In fact, the only thing I would disagree with him on is the particular risk he points out, because I think 1,000 years. Actually, I think if we make it the next 100. We're golden, okay? I really do. Maybe 150. If we get through the next 150 years, okay, I've got a really good feeling about our prospects in terms of keeping ourselves alive. But there's a lot of stuff that can happen out here in the universe, There's meteors with your name on it, and we'll talk about that. There's, stars explode. Just all kinds of stuff that can potentially take a planet out. And in fact, when you look at it from the standpoint of all kinds of stuff that can stop you from, basically halt progress in its tracks, right? We've been talking about progress all week long. Well, when Earth ends, right, progress is done if we're not someplace else, right? Everything that we've worked for up to this point is finished. So when you talk about
human progress, at least is done. If we don't get, if Earth is done before we get off of it, right? So, yeah,
that's right. It's over. And Glenn Reynolds, our good friend, Mr. Independent himself, had a good piece in USA Today this week about exactly that, talking about the Fermi paradox and intelligent life, and where are they, and what's happened to them, and talking along very much the same lines as Professor Hawking here, is there this, we've talked about this before, we've done whole shows about this before, is there this great filter in the development of intelligent species, technological species, that simply precludes them from getting any farther? You know, advanced civilizations never reach the stars because they wipe themselves out first? Well, I like where Glenn's going with this argument. Glenn says, you know what, we should get to another planet now before the great filter gets us, right? I think that's a terrific argument. It's like, I think it's Hawking's argument too.
I think he's boiling down Hawking's argument as well. That's pretty much the deal. We need to be elsewhere so that when the great filter hits, it'll only hit one of the places we are. And then we can even go back and reclaim the place that we wiped ourselves out at.
Right.
If we're in more than one place. So, I completely agree. I'm not quite as, I'm more motivated. I'm more of the, I'm more about the carrot of going to another planet than the stick, right? But whatever causes us to go, I'm going to be happy that we went. And and whether it's fear of this sort of nature or if it's a sense of adventure or whatever, it'll be a wonderful day when we get there. And
fear is a tremendous motivator. And you know what? Trying not to be wiped out is, it helps clarify thinking for sure, if nothing else, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, we can all agree that we don't want to, most of us can agree that we don't want to be wiped out. And those who don't agree with that, we're not really going to talk to them anyway, right? We're not interested in their
people that think that way. And you know what? If you think that way, then your vote doesn't count because you wish to be dead anyway, right? So
yeah, exactly. I mean,
you don't get a say in this discussion. So,
we'll be rid of you eventually anyway, or, you'll be rid of us or however you want to look at it eventually. So
that's right.
We're going to carry on with this whole progress thing. Even if it's not okay with you, we're going to try that. One of the things that Glenn talks about in this piece that I thought was quite interesting was we should look for signs of planets destroyed by physics experiments gone wrong and other signs of planetary destruction. A cue toward developing avoidance strategies of our own. We have touched on this recently when we were talking about looking for extraterrestrial civilizations. One of the possibilities is we look out into the heavens and we see the ruins, right, of extraterrestrial civilizations. We find evidence that they were there, but they're not there anymore. And Glenn is taking that idea one step further. He's saying, let's do some forensics on that, right? If we find evidence of those, let's try to get our heads around what happened, right? What went wrong there, and pre-filter ourselves. I think that's a great idea. Even if it's all hypothetical, even if it's all speculative, and we're these are just scenarios that we're creating. Any scenario that we imagine could have wiped out another planet is one that could wipe us out, right? Potentially. So, forewarned is forearmed on all of this stuff. I think that that would be not only good in terms of helping us to avoid walking down those paths, but it would also be another great motivator towards getting someplace else. It's like,
well,
once
how do we get someplace else, Bill?
What's that?
How do we get someplace else? I guess that takes us to our next one, right?
Well, there you go. You know what? It's official. NASA's peer-reviewed EM drive paper has finally been published. So we have seen this talked about. It seems like it's about 5 years people have been talking about this. Maybe it's not been quite that long. But
well, actually, Phil, I think it's been longer that the scientists have been talking about it. I think it's kind of hit public imagination probably about 5 years ago. But I think it may have been as long ago as the late 90s when it was first proposed. But the EM drive is as far as they can tell, there's no there's nothing being pushed out of the out of the drive, right? There's unlike a rocket engine or something where that seemed to obey the law, Newton's laws. This thing seems to not be obeying the laws, and yet is providing propulsion. And that's the deal. That's the, and this has been peer reviewed now and published by NASA. So this is not some, you know, mad scientist Doc Brown type in his garage, right? This is real science now.
Right.
That's
the part I've been hearing for years, is that NASA has signed off on this idea, right? Because I had heard of the EM drive before, but it seems like for some time we've been hearing about, oh, NASA's been talking about this. NASA's been looking at it. And now the paper's published, right? NASA's saying, yes, here it is. This works, right?
Yeah. Which is remarkable. Remarkable.
Yeah. The basic idea, and I'm sorry if you've covered this, but I want to reiterate this just for those who haven't picked up on it. There's no propellant, okay? You don't need rocket fuel. This is electromagnetic energy. You're basically, is it fair to call it a battery-operated rocket? I don't even know how to describe
it. You're bouncing around microwaves inside a container. And somehow by bouncing, the microwaves aren't even leaving the container of this engine. And yet it's pushing you along. What in the heck is going on here? Well, you know, they've got some theories. But our next story kind of gives perhaps an idea. The artificial inducement of space warp. Okay, it doesn't have the same pedigree of the official NASA paper, Phil, but it's they're looking here at the idea of warp drive, and up till now they've postulated that it would take some sort of exotic matter or energy to make the warp drive work, some sort of negative energy kind of thing to make it
and
work.
And by warp drive, we're talking about a some kind of engine that actually literally warps space, like in Star Trek, so that you can move more rapidly through space than you can without warping it, right? You're bending space in your favor.
You're compressing space behind you and decompressing space in front of you so that you're literally riding a wave of space time, right?
Right.
What if in this particular article that we linked to in the show notes, it's saying that it looks like it could potentially be done with just good old fashioned electricity. An electrical field could potentially this new research could potentially provide a warp bubble. Now, what if that's what's happening in the EM drive? I'm just throwing that out. I mean, a complete non scientist here throwing that out as a possibility that. You know, would that not explain it? I mean, you're not breaking the laws of physics any longer if you're warping space. You know,
right?
You're right. Moving simply from Newtonian physics to Einsteinian physics at that point. You're not breaking any laws at that point if what you're doing is warping space.
Here's what we know. We know that somehow this EM drive is working. The warp drive model is one model that could potentially explain it, right? I mean, that's the best we can do, but that's one that would anyway. And to just follow your line of thinking, if that is what's happening, then this is an exciting technology, as if it were already. But this is an exciting technology for the future, because we're really in the early, Stone Age stage of looking at some kind of interstellar drive at that point. We're at the tip of the iceberg there, right? That. Because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some technology that fiddles around with space, that does something interesting with space before we ever think about getting out of, the sun's orbit and moving humanity into distant deep space, which we may have to do, right? The bottom line is going to Mars might not be far enough. It's far enough if something bad happens to Earth, but it's not far enough if something bad happens to the sun, is it? And if we really want to be sure that we're getting humanity to the next stage, we're going to have technology that goes way beyond anything that we have right now. The EM drive is this mysterious, amazing new technology, and the warp drive, if that's what's actually happening here, I mean, obviously that's the way to go because they use it in Star Trek, Right.
Let me just say, is there any chance, Phil, that the first ship that is launched with warp drive is named anything other than Enterprise?
Well, it would just, not if I have anything to do with it. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I think that name is already picked out. I think we know what it's going to be called.
if they ask me, that's what I'm going to suggest. Absolutely. But swinging it back closer to home, before we head to the stars, we got this great story: why more than 100 scientists are backing an asteroid deflection mission. This is needed, right? You know, I just rewatched part of what's it called, Deep Impact, the other night. I was just flipping channels, and that came on, movie from the 90s. Morgan Freeman is the president. Taya Leone is in it, and a few other people. And Robert Duvall is really good in that. This comet is going to come hit Earth, right? And we've got to stop it. So we send this about the same time as Armageddon, actually. And it's pretty much the same plot, right? So we got to send this mission up to blow up the thing that's about to hit the Earth. And in the case of Deep Impact, sorry, spoilers, they just mess it up. They turn it into two comets, and now both comets are going to hit Earth. But this is a real thing that can happen. You know, this has happened before, and we talk about it all the time, right? We're always tracking some object. Well, this thing came within 60,000 miles of Earth, right? And that would have been pretty bad. Eventually, something is going to hit us. Eventually, something really big is going to hit us. Now, what are we going to do about it? And for years, we've been saying, well, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? Well, here's an actual call to send a mission out to see if we can deflect an object in space. That's an important first step to doing something about this. And it's, I think, a very realistic step, too.
Absolutely. What we do is we learn what it would take to move different sized objects. And some objects are going to be easier to move than others. You know, I'm sure there are asteroids out there that are pretty sturdy. And then there's going to be other asteroids that are other comets or whatever that are going to, it's going to be like a pile of rubble, you know, that's just
right.
Loosely held together by, you know, faint gravity. And how in the world do you move that around without it just coming apart? And you end up with a bunch of pieces. So what we do is we just learn how to push it, you know, gently over a period of time, perhaps. If we see something that's going to be, and we get better at spotting these things, we say, you know what, in 40 years, this is going to be an issue. Perhaps let's move it a little bit into a slightly safer orbit so that we know that for sure it's going to miss us in 40 years. We get out there and we begin gently nudging it over a period of maybe 5 years or so. And then, now we see that this thing is going to miss us by X number of miles. So that's the sort of thing we can learn to do. And, I think it's not a bad thing to get out there and learn the skills to do it before we're actually, straight out threatened. And I think it's a fantastic idea.
Well, you know, when you look at a model like this, you start thinking about we're going to shepherd these objects, right? We're going to sort of control our neighborhood a little bit. And I really like the idea of you take a look at something and it's not even a threat right now, but just to keep it from being one, let's give it a little nudge to be safe. I mean, when you've gotten to that level, you've kind of got things under control. And it's not this matter of waiting until it's a matter of months and it's going to destroy Earth and you got to send the nukes. Although, ultimately, nukes might be the way to do this, you know, and it's not a matter of you go try to blow the thing up. It might be that you have a nuclear blast near it in space, and the shockwave nudges it a little bit. I mean, that's one of the possibilities for how you can do something like it. There's other ways of doing it too. You can bump something into it. There's lots of potential approaches to that.
Put your EM drive on it.
Put an EM drive on it, and let it just just notch it over a little bit and see if that doesn't remove the risk. Now there's potential unintended consequences to something like this, like in the movie Deep Impact, but better that we're trying to develop a technology to do this than that we wait until it's too late, right? Or until it's almost too late and we have to do this desperate last minute Hail Mary path to try to save the Earth. I think this kind of forward thinking is very encouraging. The fact that we're thinking about this and really taking serious steps towards doing something like this now says that maybe we really will take steps towards getting to Mars. You know, maybe we really will take steps towards getting a warp drive and actually keeping the progress that we've had up to this point going. That maybe that's something that we want to keep going, even if things aren't going so well here in the universe. And this is a good way to start.
I agree. I think it's a great place to do. You know what? And also, hey, we're thinking about beginning to mine these asteroids. Hey, this is another skill set that we could use in doing that too. So it's good all around. I'm glad that this is being looked at.
That's right. Well, you know, probably mining asteroids will make us real experts in how to manage asteroids, and the whole shepherding the solar system will benefit greatly from asteroid mining technology. But in the meanwhile, if we start thinking about it from the standpoint of protecting ourselves, yeah, we might develop some techniques that will also be good for mining. It's just a virtuous cycle, right?
That's right.
The two things can feed each other. We'll get rich, and we won't blow up. I like it. Okay. Well, with that, I think we've done all the progress we can for 1 week. I'm grateful for all the progress that we've had, but the thing I'm most thankful for this day after Thanksgiving is all the opportunities to geek out that this 2016 has represented and that 2017 is bound to represent. So, Stephen, what do you got for us? What's our other geek entry for this week?
You know, Phil, the summer was sort of weak movie-wise, I thought. There just wasn't as many, you know, standout tentpole kind of movies that I enjoy over the summer. But, this fall has been better. I really liked Doctor Strange. That was a lot of fun. The Arrival was not nearly as much fun as Doctor Strange, but it was a deep thinking kind of sci-fi. If you like that kind of thing, that The Arrival I thought was worthwhile. Although, it kind of drug in the middle a little bit, but I thought it was worthwhile. Magnificent Seven, that was almost a late summer kind of thing, but I'm going to count it as a fall movie. Loved it. Thought it was great.
Yep, so, I've heard good things about that. Yep.
Yeah, a very good movie. Last weekend, I saw Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and loved it too. All very different movies I just mentioned, but, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, a lot of fun. It's based in the Harry Potter universe, but it's definitely its own thing. And, all new characters introduced here. Only, there's a couple of things that are alluded to that kind of tie in with the Harry Potter movies, but just barely. You can,
right.
If you've never seen a Harry Potter movie before and you just go see this, you're going to have a good time. It's fun. And you're not going to feel left out, that you don't know all the lore or whatever. It's a good show, a lot of fun, highly recommend.
Now, this is a period movie, is that right? Harry Potter movies were set in the present day, right? This movie is not. Is that right?
Well, Harry Potter movies were, strictly speaking, set in the 90s. It was supposed to be concurrent with when she wrote it, which was in the 90s. Of course, the movies came out about 10 years after all of the books. Each book would, was made about 10 years after the movie was made about 10 years after the book on which it was based. That kept pretty.
But I'm just thinking, the books, when they were written, the stories are told as the present
day. As modern day stories. This is definitely a period piece. This is Prohibition, and in America. This is in the United States. And that's part of the world that the wizarding world that we've never seen before. That certainly that time period, but also the United States. You get to see the differences. It's sort of funny. Some of the jargon. The Muggles are not called Muggles in the United States. So we have our own word. That's so typical. We're non-magic here.
Well, that's not as fun a term, I guess.
And that's typical, you know. We're a little more prosaic over here in the United States. I think that's kind of the joke.
That's funny. Well, you know, the thing is, I've heard that this is going to be 5 movies. So what you've seen is the first.
I'm on board. I'm ready to see more movies with these characters, and it's fun stuff.
Because I got to tell you, Harry Potter pretty much wore me out. You know, I'm looking at this like somebody contemplating the Hobbit trilogy after watching Lord of the Rings. I'm like, well, although, you know, that's not an exact analogy because this is a little more separate from that than Hobbit is from Lord of the Rings. But I can see, you know, I can see where people get a little bit of wizard fatigue possibly, but it's been a few years since there's been a Harry Potter movie, and I can only imagine that for the real fans, the diehard fans, there's got to be some Easter eggs in there, right? They got to be throwing some stuff in, and if there's going to be 5 of these movies, we're going to see a younger Dumbledore or something, right? I mean, they've got to throw some of that stuff in there sooner or later. So great geeky fun for the true blue Potter fans, but it sounds like just maybe for people who like monster movies, huh? Or magic movies, or
it's definitely a fantasy genre kind of thing, and it's just fun, and introduces some very likable characters and some good bad guys, and I mean I found it very interesting, and I'm on board for more movies.
All right. Well, and it just goes to show you, don't let a good universe go to waste, right?
That's right.
It's like, you know, you spend all this time setting it up. Let's tell some more stories there. Okay, so Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Steven says big thumbs up for that, so everybody check that out. And with that, Steven, you know what? We'll have to call it a week. We've done 3 shows on Progress. We've done some other geek, and starting next week, we're well into the Christmas season. We're going to have 3 brand new shows. Looking forward to doing that. Looking forward to being with you all. And until next time, live to see it.